I have nothing to disclose. I don't have a slide saying that, but trust me, I have nothing to disclose. I'm talking today about the whole phenomena that some people call new media. You may have heard it referred to in lots of other ways. You may have heard it referred to as social media, as digital media, as Web 2.0, and there's still not a clear consensus on definitions. But what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about how this new media landscape can be a little intimidating and try to help make a little sense of it. I want to focus on things that we would kind of generally agree have three characteristics. One is we're talking about electronic tools. We're talking about tools that facilitate interactive communication, and I think that's an incredibly important part of this, and that enable users to move back and forth from audience to content producer, which is a real major change in the way we think of media. And I have all kinds of ideas swirling in my head after listening to the other presentations about how consistent this trend in media really is to what Rena's talking about with the social context. In other words, you know, the public out there is changing media to reflect that social context, and I think that makes it a very exciting tool to use in public health. Patterns do start to emerge when you look at this, and I really like this slide because it tried to start making a little sense of the landscape that's out there and the landscape that's constantly changing. Now, I'm going to focus in on about four of these areas, which are certainly the most widely used, at least at the moment. And I want to talk a little bit in a descriptive way about what these are, and then I want to talk about how they're changing practice already, and what little we do know right now about how they may be changing theory. So first of all, let's start with Facebook. How many of you have a profile on Facebook? Okay, so I'm talking to the converted here. But anyway, I do want to just share with you a few things about Facebook. It's a really interesting phenomenon. We know that this is the social media site that is most, or social profile site that is most used. About 73% who have a profile have it on Facebook. And in case you thought it was just teenagers, 2/3 of Americans use social media sites. Even, as a matter of fact, CDC has a Facebook site, and almost all the businesses that you're aware of have a Facebook site now. So it's a very common process, and I'll talk a little bit more about how CDC is using some of these. Next one I want to look at is Twitter. How many of you are on Twitter? And how, and you can see far fewer hands. How many of you mostly receive information on Twitter rather than tweet yourself? Okay, and that's pretty consistent with the statistics that we have, that Twitter is really more of a broadcast channel than many realize. The majority of users never post anything, but they're definitely reading and clicking on these tweets. And awareness of Twitter has really exploded in the last couple of years. The percentage of Americans who reported being familiar with Twitter rose from 5% in 2008 to 87% today. And nearly 2/3 of people who are active Twitter users access these social networking sites using their mobile phone. And we're going to be talking about mobile phones a little later. There are something like 106 million accounts and 55 million tweets a day. I don't know how people keep up with all of this. The other part of the social media or the new media landscape are blogs, and I think blogs are particularly interesting for us in public health. In a way, I think they are becoming the virtual opinion leaders. You probably know the concept of opinion leaders. Well, a lot of people follow blogs in that kind of way. These are the sources they turn to when they want to get a trusted and a sort of peer approach, but someone they believe is following the information more closely than they are. And it is projected, there are over 133 million blogs on the internet today, and it's projected that 67% of us in the next couple of years who are on the internet will be using and reading blogs. And one very interesting example, if you haven't looked at them, are what people refer to as the mommy blogs. And I think they're good examples of these opinion leaders. And if you're trying to get people to get their children immunized with H1N1, you know, the bloggers are an important source for you to reach out to. Why do people blog? I love this slide because it gives you lots of different reasons why people blog. And it's all the way from just sharing their own opinions to really wanting to disseminate information to other people. But it's a very social process, right? And I think that's the point I wanted to make. Okay, another form of new media that you may not hear this term so often, and that is media sharing, but you're very familiar with the sources that do this, and the primary one is YouTube. And this is where information content is actually created by individuals like you and I, because we now have very accessible and scalable publishing information and technologies, and we share that information with others. Here's an example of YouTube, and just to give you an idea, it's just a phenomenal number. We have 12.2 billion YouTube views per month, 2 billion views a day, which is double the primetime audience of what used to be the three major US networks combined, 24 hours of video uploaded every minute, and 70% of this traffic comes from outside the US, which was an interesting statistic to me, and I didn't really realize that. Another one of these media sharing sites that you may know is Flickr, where people can share their photographs. And the last one I want to talk about are wikis and collaborative editing. This is just, probably all of you have used these or at least read them, a collaborative website which can be directly edited by anyone who has access to it. So again, the collaboration that you've been seeing some of the other speakers talk about, you know, here's a mechanism, here's a tool that's being used to do that. And we have some of those in the medical world. Here's Medipedia, for example, an example of a wiki. Now, I promised you I would talk about how is this changing practice. And I thought a really good example of that was looking at the way CDC and FDA collaborated on use of social media or new media during the recent peanut butter recall. If you remember, this was a pretty huge recall, and it was a complicated one from a communication standpoint because it was not jars of peanut butter, but it was products that had peanut butter as an ingredient. So there were, I can't remember, I think over 3,000 products that people needed to check to see if they had and throw them out or take them back or whatever. And this was really about the time that particularly CDC was poised to do a lot of social media. So I'm not going to read through all these examples, but I wanted to show you all the different forms that social media can take. And I'm not suggesting that they use these instead of traditional media, because they clearly were doing both. But it opens up the realm of channels in a tremendous way, which has both advantages and disadvantages. I do want to show you just a few of these to give you a little better flavor for them, and maybe talk even a little bit more theoretically about what they might be doing. These buttons and badges were very interesting. These are things, you know how when you vote, you get a little sticker and then everybody can see that you voted, and this begins to set a social norm. Well, this is the same thing electronically. You can take one of these and add it to your profile on Facebook, to your website, to whatever you're doing, which shows that I did the behavior, and that there's sort of a social norm developing around doing the behavior, which I thought was very interesting. Widgets are a tremendous gadget to use because what they allow you to do is really transport your content to other people's website. So if someone downloaded this widget onto their website, then by clicking on this, they could get to all those product recalls. A very efficient and tremendous way to get that information disseminated widely. And I have figures here. It was amazing how many of these, there were 15.5 million page views of this widget, and about 20,000 people added it to their website profile or blog. So a lot of pickup of this. And CDC has been doing a lot with e-cards, which are a little bit like those badges and buttons. This is a way, again, of sending out a quick message, an attractive message, to get other people to engage in the behavior. And they have these on all kinds of topics. This was salmonella, but it was on water frogs instead of peanut butter, but I like the picture. So I promised I would also look at changes in health communication theory. And unfortunately, I can't show you a beautiful model because I don't think we're even close to being there yet. I think everybody's trying to figure this out and figure out how it works and what's important about it and what's really different about new media. So instead, I'm going to walk you through some of the characteristics of new media that I think should be pushing us in the direction of new theory, and really will make it almost mandatory that we have new theory because the old theories just don't make any sense. And I mentioned earlier that interactivity is probably one of the most important characteristics of new media. And interactivity, with it comes a lot of these other characteristics that make a big difference in the way people process, get, and process information. Complexity of choice is one of those. I mean, you now have a lot of control and a lot of choices to make when you access information. You no longer have to receive it in the way some sender decided you wanted it. You can have a lot more choice than that. And that results, too, in involving your users in a lot more depth. And we know that if you're more involved, you ought to be processing more systematically, which should lead you to greater behavior change or more involvement with that information. It can be very responsive to you as an individual with this interaction, and that should make it much more tailored for you, and I'm going to talk a little bit about tailoring in a moment. And the ease of adding new information. There are a lot of these electronic tools that will allow, if you take that widget and put it on your website, then the content will be automatically updated when CDC updates it. So, and think about our expectations now. If we click on CNN, we expect to know what's happening in real time. And so we have information that we expect to be new and extremely timely. And of course, probably the most important is the facilitation of interpersonal communication. My field of communication, I always hated the fact that they kind of artificially divided it into mass comm and interpersonal. And now, I mean, where are those lines? They are completely blurred, and they probably should be completely blurred. So I think that's very exciting, and no longer can we divide our theories that way. One of the things this has led to already is the phenomenon of tailoring, which you've probably heard many talks about. This is the process of crafting messages to reflect an individual's characteristic, not targeting to a whole segment, but targeting to an individual. And every piece of research that I have seen and has been reported in reviews suggests that tailored information is always superior to non-tailored information. So it's a very effective strategy. And consistent with what some other people have been saying on the panel, we are beyond targeting or tailoring only on demographics. We are now tailoring on cultural factors, and some of these not just the superficial ones. So I think we're beginning to get a lot more sophisticated in how we do this. Feedback is another important dimension of new media. We've always had feedback in our models, but it's been a very limited form of feedback. Now we have feedback to everything. I mean, every CNN story you click on the web allows people to comment on it, right? And we have this phenomenon of wisdom of the crowds. We have people telling us in interviews that I never listen to one source. I always go out and get information from four or five places and then come to a consensus. And we have feedback of many different kinds. We have normative, where I can look at what I'm doing compared to a sort of social norm to other people. I also can have very personalized feedback. Any of you ever gone on this website called Real Age, where you put in your sort of status, your information, plus your lifestyle characteristics, you get back your real age. And I have a friend who did that and completely changed his lifestyle. You know, lost a lot of weight, exercises, and, you know, because he was scared by those numbers he saw. And ipsative feedback is another type, and this is where you can compare your own progress with feedback. Where you were when you started, you can monitor your weight, your exercise, whatever that might be. There are a lot of other attributes, too, that I'm not going to spend a lot of time with. I will mention a couple of these. Temporal flexibility has changed the media landscape completely. Time shifting, people talk about. How many of you have DVRs? Yeah, practically everybody has a DVR. You don't watch television programs when they're on. You watch them at your own convenience. And that's a phenomenon that's going to really increase. Everything is very attractive content these days. Almost every website you click on has video. The increase in video is just tremendous. And also, of course, the personal control you have. We have my CNN, my CDC, you know, we have all of these very tailored information sources. I think Elaine had asked us to consider the dark side, so I wanted to do that. And I thought it was fitting that I chose a quote from a young person's blog. This is Tiger Lily's blog, and she's studying media, but this is what she had to say about it, and I'm not going to read this to you, but she talks about all the harmful and hateful information that is available too. So this is not all positive. And hopefully you had a chance. She talks about white supremacists, pro-anisites, internet pornography. And finally, I want to say that I think mobile media may be a real game changer in all of this. It's the most exciting thing I've seen in communication for a while, and exciting for a number of reasons. First of all, let me find my numbers here. It's exciting because of just the pervasiveness. 82% of U.S. adults are active cell phone users, and 43% have downloaded apps of some kind. And in the month of September, 234 million Americans aged 13 plus used mobile devices. And a lot of people, I've seen a lot of quotes saying that people would rather leave their watch, their billfold at home than they would their cell phone. So they're always with them. They're right there, and I think they have tremendous potential. This slide just tells you some of the things that we're doing now on cell phones and smartphones. But the most important thing, based on what you heard in the panel, is that this is a channel that seems to begin to reverse some of the digital divide issues we've talked about, in that more minorities use cell phones and even use non-voice applications than whites do. So this is an interesting new channel for us to look at. And I would just close by saying I really hope and encourage that you will explore these channels and begin to think about their potential for use in public health. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our speakers today. I think they did a wonderful job of outlining the importance of social context and how we're pushing the edge on old models that we have been using for a number of years to really enlarge the paradigm and to be on the advent and the precipice of some exciting changes. So help me in thanking all of our panelists, and I'm sure if you'd like to ask them some questions, they'll be happy to address them here. Thank you very much.